This is the Recency Bias. Welcome to your morning after mini pod following up Monday evening, Monday night. It was a late one if you're in the Eastern time zone. A Monday night game one, 4-1 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. Not the start the Habs wanted to their Stanley Cup semifinal series. Not the start any of us fans wanted to see. But I will say this. In many ways, that kind of felt inevitable. The Habs had not trailed in, as we all know, forever. Getting to record-setting territory with how long they'd had leads. They were on a 7-game winning streak, which is ridiculous even in the regular season, let alone the playoffs. And so in some ways, there was bound to be an L at some point. You don't want it to kick off the series, obviously, put yourself in a hole. And when all was said and done, it was not an ideal night for the Canadiens at all. The Vegas Golden Knights looked like the better team in that game. But again, I'm not shocked either. What happened was the 4-game sweep leading to yet another near week off for the Canadiens didn't really seem to have any effect on the Habs' ability to get going in the early going. The Canadiens actually got off to a really, really good start and played an excellent first period, for the most part, against Vegas, despite allowing a goal in that first frame. But what you saw happen was at first the Habs were allowed to go out and kind of play the same game that they had against the Jets. But you saw a point where Vegas started to kind of react themselves to what the Habs were doing, and they started to play their game a little bit. And when that was brought forward, when Vegas started to play their style and were able to impose their will a little bit, the Habs kind of struggled to react to it. And I'm not really shocked by that. The Winnipeg Jets series, in a lot of ways, probably ill-prepared them for what was coming. Because the Jets were bad. The Jets just did not play a good series, and you saw it on Monday night in Game 1 of this one. The Canadiens just don't have that extra half second that they had against the Jets the whole time. They don't have the ease of transition through the neutral zone that they were getting against the Jets, and they're getting banged a lot harder. I mean, we saw the weakness of the Winnipeg Jets was their defense. The strength, perhaps, the strongest of several strengths for these Vegas Golden Knights is their defense. And they did some good, you know, they'd done some good work. You saw, even though I thought it was a reasonably decent night for the Suzuki to Foley Caulfield line, they weren't able to do what they have been doing in the last 7 games, particularly in that Winnipeg series, where they were just able to sustain consistent attacks because the Vegas Golden Knights were really forcing the issue. And they forced the issue on very strong forechecks, very heavy defense, and a clogged up neutral zone. And the Canadiens in-game kind of struggled to react to that. Once they came out of the gate, were able to play their own game, and sort of were seeing the same thing that the Jets proposed until about midway through that period when the Knights found their legs and started playing their game. And the Canadiens just weren't ready to kind of push back. They almost settled into a different speed, a different tempo, a different intensity. And the game kind of got away from them from there. Now, will they be able to find that speed, that intensity, that tempo the rest of the series? I don't know. That remains to be seen. We know that the Golden Knights are probably a step above, certainly several steps above the Winnipeg Jets and arguably a step above the Toronto Maple Leafs. So maybe the Canadiens are just outclassed in this series. That's entirely still possible. But I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt in this one that more than anything, it was just an inability to react or to counter what Vegas brought because they hadn't played that speed yet, or at least not since the Toronto series, certainly. And it's hard. I mean, if you've played any sport at all that involves kind of that kind of tempo, you probably have some idea what I'm talking about. You know, you'll play, say you just play like recreation soccer or something. if one night you're playing a team that is just not very good and you have a great time passing the puck, passing the ball around, you know, you're getting open looks, you got plenty of time to do things, and a couple nights later you run into a team that just is much better, plays a high intensity, it can take the entirety of the game, or you just don't get there in the game to be able to play up to that level because you settled into something else. And it's hard to flip that switch mid-game. Hopefully the Canadians are able to react to what they saw in game one and come game two be ready for the change of pace, the change of intensity, the heavy hits, everything else that Vegas is going to bring it for them. If they don't adjust, then this is probably going to be a pretty short series, because we saw that if Vegas is going to be allowed to do everything they want to do that they did from the second period on in game one, it's going to be a short series, and the naysayers will be proven correct that, you know, the Habs perhaps got a little lucky on their route to the semifinals, especially in playing the Winnipeg Jets. We can say right now the Jets did not put up much of a fight at all, and let's keep our fingers crossed that they lulled the Canadians into not quite being able to react to what Vegas was bringing. And I think it especially hurt the Canadians, and so it's strange, but I think it hurt the Habs that they were able to play their own game for at least the first 10 to 12 minutes of that first period, and really overall in the first period, dominated in, we'll get to the stats in a bit, but dominated in high danger chances, really were buzzing. And that third line, the fourth line, rather, of, you know, the old man line of veteran players with Armia and Perry and Staal looked like they were going to be able to do their same thing in that first period. And the rest of the game, suddenly Eric Staal's half-step slow became an issue. The fourth line just wasn't able to do that thing that they were able to do so well in the Winnipeg series. Maybe they'll adjust as well, you know. I definitely have more concerns about that line in this one. Corey Perry's still doing his thing on the power play. Corey Perry's still trying to get Max Pacioretty mad. All right, let's get into the game itself. How'd this thing break down? Well, no Petrie for the Habs is a problem, right? That's a huge issue. Brett Kulak had a bad night, I think it's safe to say. Romanov looked a little better. He was a little confused, I think, on one of the goals, though. It was more Kulak not being able to take his assignment that hurt things. Sherratt had his roughest night of the playoffs thus far. Is fatigue setting in from all the minutes that they've played? I mean, look, missing Jeff Petrie is gigantic. When Sean and I on the Big Pod did our ranking of the most valuable players for the Montreal Canadiens this season, Jeff Petrie was number one, and it really wasn't close. So the Habs are now missing their second best player. Let's not forget about Carey Price, but the Habs are missing their best skater, a key to what makes that defense work, especially in these playoffs, I think. You know, yes, Jeff Petrie hasn't put up the production in the playoffs that he did in the regular season, not even close, but Jeff Petrie is the only guy who can play all the minutes that Sherratt and Weber and Edmondson are playing, and also move the puck. And he was an important part of a lot of those offensive breakouts in those last two series. And you really feel him missing in game one. Hopefully he's able to come back soon and help shore up that blue line. Not just shore up, but raise the level of the blue line considerably. But even when he comes back, I don't know what we're going to get. Because if it's an injured hand, a lot of what Jeff Petrie does is probably, to some degree, attached to his ability to really use his hands. So he may be limited, but I still think it'll be better than, it looks like my guess would be at this point, Kulak would come out of the lineup. Now that's could be an absurd guess, because we've seen Dom Ducharme make choices with who's playing on defense that I haven't really understood to this point. But I think Romanov, through the two games that he's now played, has proven himself quite valuable. I mean, laid out a massive, massive hit in that first period when things are still going well for the Canadians that got everybody's attention. And he can do that. He can do that. And he's another good puck-moving defenseman. You definitely want him out there when Petrie's not available. But I think I would keep him in the lineup, of course, when Petrie comes back, which hopefully is soon. It's expected sooner rather than later. He is supposed to be back in this series. but we don't know if it'll be in time for Wednesday night's game two. Fingers crossed, otherwise the Canadiens could find themselves in a hole. Like I said, though, the Habs got off to a good start, exactly like you'd want to see. I think everybody who was, if you were hanging with people, able to watch this game, the conversation, I'm sure, is the first period was much the same as mine was in the texts, which was, hey, this is exactly what we want to see. These guys look ready for Vegas. Get an early power play, nothing to show for it, though, and the game started to turn 9 minutes 15 seconds into that first period. Shea Theodore, who is very damn good, he goes in and makes it 1-0 for Vegas. Off a face-off win, Gustafson screens Price, and it's 1-0. Gustafson, probably the second goal that he's been really kind of hung up for in the playoffs so far. Not terrible, but that one was definitely on him. Carey just did not see it, and that was really unfortunate because the Habs did not deserve to be down 1-0 at that point. But alas, that's what happens when you lose faceoffs and struggle to control defensive zone faceoffs, which the Canadiens do and just did in this game time and time again. It wasn't there for them in the faceoff circle on Monday night. And, you know, you can lose faceoffs and still do something after losing the faceoff so that it doesn't all go downhill on you. They were not doing those things afterwards. That's where you saw Romanov be a little bit confused at one point. Not on that goal, but on a later goal. That's where you saw Kulak lose some battles. And in this case, that's where you saw Gustafson not really react properly, didn't box out, and just in front of Carey Price, Habs down 1-0. And Vegas kind of started to push back and doing some buzzing at that point. That's when you got Corey Perry, John at Patches, trying to get him off his game, which you gotta love, because we know Pacioretty is a cerebral player. And I don't necessarily mean that to say he's a super intelligent player. I'm not saying he's a stupid player or anything. I think Max is a pretty smart hockey player. But we know that you can get in Max Pacioretty's head, or that Max Pacioretty can get in his own head. And so I'm all for Corey Perry deciding that Max Pacioretty is going to be his target in this series, because we know that sometimes this guy can think too much or get in his own way. We've seen it, we've experienced it firsthand, so I've got no opposition to Corey Perry doing what he can to get Max Pacioretty a little bit distracted. These teams evidently do not like each other. You know, not just the Corey Perry, Max Pacioretty jawing. This was a, right from midway through, well, pretty much from after the time Shea Theodore scored on, these two teams were banging into each other, pushing each other, clutching, grabbing each other after the whistle. A lot of post-whistle activity. Vegas and Montreal have played each other 6 times in their entire history. If this series goes to 7 games, they will double plus 1 the amount of times they've played forever. But somehow, despite that, they immediately had some animosity towards one another. So you know, if this series goes some distance, it could be pretty fun in that sense. The Vegas forecheck just kept coming and created a power play. Deneau called for hooking. Canadiens, though, penalty kill relatively effective in this game, despite the fact that Vegas has a terrifying power play. PK, or at least the elements of what should be a terrifying power play, the PK did a good job in game one of keeping the Knights, I hate saying Golden Knights, too many words, shorten it, the Knights to limited success on the power play. In the first period, though, final tally after 20 minutes, shots were 12-9 for the Habs. The Habs had 6 high-danger chances. Vegas had just 1. Alas, though, it was 1-0 for VKG. Into the second period, the Canadiens were killing a power play with, I think there was 15 seconds maybe left on the power play as the second period started for Vegas. And as that thing's coming to an end, Sherratt immediately takes a puck over the glass penalty. Not your traditional puck over the glass, one side or the other, but no, he sends it the end of the rink and out. The Habs would manage to kill those back-to-back power plays. Sometimes you do that and you can get some momentum. Didn't have any momentum in that sense. You can get some momentum, but that was not the case for the Habs in this one by any stretch of the imagination. They seem tired after killing those back-to-back penalties, and seconds after they did so, boom, Shea Theodore completely sells a slap shot. One of the best sell jobs I have ever seen. Carey Price bites completely, and I do not blame him. I don't blame Carey Price one bit for being completely ready for that Shea Theodore shot. He went so far as to hit his stick on the ice. Like, everything suggested he was going to send a slap shot. Instead, it's a one-timer over to Alec Martinez, and it is 2-0 Vegas at that point. Price would redeem himself soon after that. Not that he needed any redemption, Price the Redeemer, but he did make up for the fact that he bit on the sell job with a massive save. It was Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone coming down 2-on-1. Huge glover from Price. He gives Stone the old Patakwa wink, which, you know, fun, cool. Like it. I like that, you know, for all the intensity that Carey Price brings, he's conscious enough to give the old winkaroo. That was in the back of his head that he might do that at some point. Carey Price winks like I do, though, which is to say, the other eye kind of goes with it. So it's the wink is great. Not as great a sales shop if you give the half wink. I thought Carey Price would be more skilled at winking one eye without blinking the other, just because of how dexterous he is in that. But it was all good. I liked what I saw. Unfortunately, the rest of the way, we wouldn't like what we saw. Another Vegas power play, this time on an Edmondson slash. The power play didn't last long, though, as a 3-on-2 created by Byron using some speed drew a penalty. We were 4-on-4. 4-on-4 sometimes, though, looked still somewhat like a Vegas power play. Soon after that, Kulak would take a tripping penalty again. Killed again. As I say, the PK doing a good job. Gallagher would actually draw an offensive zone penalty for the Habs. Habs would go to the power play. Cole Caulfield would get a golden chance to finally break through in this playoffs with his first goal. He missed. However, seconds later, the exact same opportunity presents itself. Cole not going to miss this time. The kid finally gets it. His brother wearing the Cole Caulfield t-shirt in the stands. The family loving it. They finally get to see the kid play. He scores his first of the playoffs. We've all been waiting for that. It is a 2-1 game, and you talk yourself into the Habs being able to come back in this one. However, that didn't last long. Two poor shifts after the goal, and no time before Janmark makes it 3-1. Yes, this one once again off losing a face-off. Kulak, as I mentioned earlier, loses his battle. And Romanov looked a little confused on where he was supposed to go. There's a bit of directing out there, and that direction gave Vegas the little second of opportunity they needed to beat Price. And that's where the game felt like it got away. Just as they had used a power play to come back in the thing and make it a one-goal game, all that momentum completely drained. 3-1 on the Janmark goal. Price kept the Habs in the thing. He was making some big, big saves in the second period. He made a huge one on Marchessault to keep it a two-goal game. But the second period was not the first. Vegas looked much better in that one. The shots were 13-5 in favor of the home team. And into the third period, the trend continued that way for the Knights. Vegas completely clogging up the neutral zone throughout the period. And midway through, they eventually beat Price. Vegas's defense being the big difference as yet another blue liner. Holden scored to make it 4-1. That was the final score. Going to be tough. It's going to be tough. This is not a shock. The Habs can learn from what they did, hopefully, in the first period and figure out a way to continue to apply that. Hopefully, they're ready for the tempo and the intensity come game two. We'll see what happens on a Wednesday night. But they know the task is huge now. Vegas looked really good. That's a damn good team. We knew it. And the Habs have to figure out how to adjust. This is a team that has adjusted. This is a team that has played against solid teams like the Maple Leafs, been down 3-1, lost 4-0 in that game 4, and bounced back to win the series. I have not quit on the team simply because of a tough game 1, but they'll need to figure some things out by game 2. That's for sure. Carey Price, still a monster. That's good news. Jeff Petrie getting back in the lineup, that would help a lot. I think it's going to be a tough series for Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I do. He's a player who still needs that extra half second, and he's just not going to find it in this series at all. I'm a little worried about what Kotkaniemi and that line are going to be reduced to in this series. I think it's going to be a challenge for him. I think this could be a big series for Brendan Gallagher to do his thing. I hope to see more of that, obviously. A bit of a tough slog, even for that first line, or second line, however you want to call it. I still think the Deneau line is probably the first line. We're going to need to see something from them at some point. Does Tatar make an appearance in this series for his revenge against Vegas? I would be very surprised. It doesn't feel like this is a series that you want Thomas Tatar coming into if he couldn't make it in the Winnipeg series. You know, there's going to be Evans as an option to get back in this lineup at some point. I thought Lehkonen played another really good game, actually, in game one. You know, he's not the obvious pick to come out of the lineup. I don't know who is at this point. Maybe it's Staal. Maybe as things are much faster now than they were in the Winnipeg series, Evans comes in that spot for Staal. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe the lineup just stays as it is. It's all in the response now. What do they bring to game two? We shall see that one once again at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Another late one, as they will be in this series. Till then, take care.